Hello, humans, hey. And welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news, music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
This is episode 151.
Woo.
Three albums to review for you this week. This week they are albums this time. We have Folklore by Taylor Swift, a surprise drop release or album release
Drop-a-rooney.
That dropped. This is Friday. No Pressure by Logic, allegedly the retirement of Logic. And I Can Feel You Forgetting Me by Neon Trees. I will reserve my commentary for the album reviews.
Yes.
As always, we have new singles. We have a good amount of music news. A very small amount of that news has to do with Kanye West, you'll be pleased to know. So why not? Let's just get into it. This is Fuck It, my podcast. I've been able to get Gorilla's Song Machine in for a while.
They're so spaced out that I'm not against it. So
yeah, and it's been they're monthly.
A month or two months, depending.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of album release project thing. So it's cool to do every single month. Anyways, this month's Song Machine episode was Pac-Man featuring Schoolboy Q.
Yo, I've been at the top of the top, fell from the ceiling before I fell, cause I needed to grow. Bruce Lee, Roy with the glow, walked on the edge, fuck trying to dream in the bed. Before I die on these meds, nigga gon' die in the feds. Before I make it to jail, probably put one in the head. Fuck the judge and the prosecutor for hanging me dead. Plus 30 and still moving, I'm closer to live, right? Closer to live, right? All the trauma from past never taught me to fear heights. Norma to fly, now can't be stuck in the red lights.
It's growing on me more. I'd say it's maybe my second favorite of the one to come out. Because the first time I heard it, I was like, there's a lot happening here that's kind of like strange.
Yeah,
the second time, it's in one of those Gorilla songs, there are many of these, where the more you hear it, the more you understand like
how it's going to take me a long time to get into it. It's kind of stuff of a couple other stuff on Humans is like that, where it took a long time for maybe like a year or 2 years for me to actually like it. Like the one with the little phone ringing stuff. I can't think of that.
Out of Body.
Out of Body. It took me a while to like Out of Body first. Heard it, hated it. Kind of same thing with this, with Pac-Man. First verse, I really didn't like it. Second list, I'm like, okay, I kind of understand it. Schoolboy Q is like, it's just an awkward mix with them and Gorillaz because they're very different. But it's, after a few more listens of it, I've gotten into it a little bit more, but it's definitely not my favorite of the releases.
So here's
I always like experimentation and different stuff. There's a lot of sounds, though.
My analysis of this song is that when you hear it enough times, you start to enjoy it. One of the things that I'm not saying like you will absolutely enjoy the song, but if you do hear it enough times to like it, the things you will appreciate is that both Damon Albarn /2D and Schoolboy Q almost do like two features each on the song. Because both, let's say 2D for a point. Like, they do two different, like, singing styles on the song. And I think for Gorilla Song, it's pretty interesting. Often Gorilla Songs have two sort of separate parts that make a whole. I mean, read a Feel Good Inc. But when Schoolboy Q comes in, he has this one verse, which I don't, that's the part where it least fits in. It seems like the song itself is kind of switching in this point, and then Schoolboy Q sort of jumps in this point, and it seems like it's going to be one of those, like, awkward alternative rap collaborations, but then the beat switches again, and then Schoolboy Q starts up again, and that part really hits. So I think,
what you mean.
Damon Albarn was trying to do one of those like Tony Hawk Pro Skater like crazy ass moves and try to land it, and not all of this landed, but I think it came
it's
close.
Like, when you
like it lose too many points.
It's like when you land and you like stumble. Follow it as you stumble and you almost touch the ground, but you don't touch the ground, and you stand up, you're like, it counts.
Yeah, and it's like, you lose a couple style of points, but you win.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's counts. That, but what do I know? I'm biased for Gorillaz. And then we have sort of an EP, but this is two singles that got released from Jermaine Cole.
Almost Not a Little Bitch, Jermaine Cole.
Nominated for the Not a Little Bitch Award, J. Cole,
this year. A couple
of
times.
And he's nominated this year because of the recent No Name controversy. About a month ago, we got into a beef with No Name. But these songs don't have to do much with the beef. These songs are more related to what's supposed to be J. Cole's upcoming project.
Yes.
Probably coming out this year or early next year. But the songs were called The Climb Back and Lion King on Ice. And The Climb Back is sort of like... there's two flavors of J. Cole.
Yeah, I say The Climb Back is kind of like your your bread and butter J. Cole, like 5.5 minute song or so.
Gotta know the ropes and a protocol, or they gon' for show blow your clothes half off like a promo code. Made a little tune called Folding Clothes, and a nigga still ain't on the fold. Under pressure, well, you know what Cole do. Make a diamond, they just rhyming me, I'm quoting gold. One phone call gets you canceled like a homophobe. In this PC culture, dress me as
lots of good
like
flow, lots of good vocals. Petty, yeah, it's like a great production, you know, the usual, but it's like nothing spectacular. You know, 3.6 Ronkin, as yeah. I always like to say.
And Lion King on Ice is very, it's a different flavor of J. Cole's, yeah. But it's like, it's a flavor you've heard before.
So we gotta be smarter, we trying to see August. Some nigga won't make it past summer regardless. I'm trying my hardest to stack my deposit. These niggas be looking at me like I got it. Deep down inside though, I still feel as broke as that nigga who just graduated from college. Scraping up change they got left in my pockets. I'm trying to make nickels turn into a dollar. Riding the train way too shy to go holler. Just watch it get off at a stop, I'm a coward. Fuck it though, you got a way bigger target. I'ma do it so big they won't know what to call it. Sound like a whole Lambo truck on my stomach. Bitch, I ain't hungry, this feeling is starving. Gotta move mama from out them apartments. Gotta put Bill on the map, we forgot.
Similar style, similar flows, like tried and true, but like especially, never mind our opinions on J. Cole's like KFD and some of his newer work, where he's like, okay, you have these messages, but you're not really like, you're going back on them, you're not living up to them. And even beyond just the message of the music, your albums are starting to sound like sort of monotonous and similar. You need that growth. And from these two singles, I would still like to see that growth, but Audio Face Rule, we'll wait until
The weekend
comes out. Let's go straight into the news, and we'll start with like sort of an update thing. So in episode 91 of Audio Face, we did our music recommendations. Sometimes near the end part of episodes, we'll do music recommendations of different songs and albums
this
that we like.
A year and a half, 2 years ago or so, maybe.
Yeah, roughly a year and a half ago, and Sean recommended Bane's World, who is this indie artist who we actually sort of know vaguely, not like friends or even like really acquaintances, but like from our neighborhoods, like went to our same schools and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's come out over the past like month, a bunch of stories have come out of women coming forward kind of in the Los Angeles area and community, accusing Bane's World of a number of different things, ranging from contacting and sort of like grooming underage girls, all the way up to allegedly sexual assault of someone who is blacked out.
Yeah.
So there are not just like, I didn't make that range of saying like, oh, there are these two cases. There have been like five
there are
or more.
Multiple accusations against him, and everybody's like, yeah, all this stuff happened.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, it's
not, really kind of like, it's shaken up the LA indie scene a lot for sure, because there's a lot of other artists.
There's a lot of other artists that we're going to talk about in a little bit too that are like, there's a lot that's been coming out in the indie scenes. If you've been in the indie world, you know this is one thing that's kind of been a prevalent problem or so, depending on the artists and stuff. But even some of his former bandmates and stuff have come out and said, oh yeah, this shit's definitely real. So it's really sad to see, because he made damn good music, but if you're a fucking pedo, you're a fucking pedo. So at the end of the day.
If you're... Yeah, I'm very cautious with these, because they're all like strong terms, but he's also very strong actions. It's obviously very sickening to see this sort of behavior, and it sort of happened. It's good in this case that, unlike what has happened historically, the community's kind of coming around and saying, trying to root out the problems instead of hiding for them as much, and hiding behind them, and there seems to be more of an awakening in this scene. Bane's World released sort of like this apology, not really
half-assed apology.
Definitely half-assed apology. Yeah. Not really acknowledging the full extent to what he was allegedly doing. More saying like, I don't mean to have harmed anyone. If I did, I'm sorry, and I care about my family. The usual kind of non-apology stuff. So
it's sad, because he's I knew him pretty well in middle school. You can kind of tell he's creepy then, like on the low. But his he was surrounded by really great women. Like, his mom was awesome. I remember being with her a few times, and she's one of those like powerful women that's really inspiring and stuff. So it's sad to see that when you have that like surrounding base of great people around you, then you fuck up. So
yeah,
good job, idiot.
In the spirit of, I mean, I have no, if I'm putting all my cards on the table, I never liked him from the start. I had one class with him. I just found him to be like sort of like the usual sort of prattish white boy jerk that is very much existent in my high school experience. But nevertheless, you hope in this sense of evolving as a person and moving on from things that like he starts to like really see the error of his actions, change his ways, and like try to recuperate the harm that was caused. Part of that recuperation might just be like taking a breather from it all for a little while, but
it's bad.
Yeah,
and it's sad, and it doesn't need to happen.
It's just a person's choice, and it's just god damn it, humans. And it's also
This is another thing, like, because we've had like there's different styles of allegations and stuff against musicians. There's the one like from Sigur Rós, where that one of Sigur Rós's drummer Ori, that one, when we talked about that one, seems like it's a genuine miscommunication between two people, because it's like randomly come out, there's not much stuff against it because it's just them. And then you have one where it's like a backlash of so many people, like, no, this stuff definitely happened, where it's just a bunch of fans and stuff too, are because normally you have fans that swarm to protect him, and now it's not. People are like, even people in the fandom and stuff are like, no, this is pretty bad.
Yeah, the isolated incident argument that sometimes comes up from these things quickly falls apart when there are numerous allegations.
When it becomes
indicative of a pattern of personality.
Exactly.
Which I think people could see from a mile away. But nevertheless, we'll go into more of this because it's happening and it's there, and it's about time in the music world that this gets called out. But Burger Records, which is kind of a smaller but similarly known record label, has a whole slew of artists and employees who are accused of sexual misconduct. Basically, just like it's rampant at this label.
Yes.
Members of bands including, like Sean mentioned earlier, Swimmers, The Growlers, Frights, and Buttertones, and Cosmonauts, allegedly all of them, not all of them band members, but at least one member in that band is accused of alleged like sexual misconduct.
Yeah.
Or predatory behavior more broadly. Burger Records has announced it'll completely shut down because of the allegations. Originally, they were going to just like rebrand.
But it's so rampant. I was like, you can't. You've fucked up so much within there that there's no matter what you do, there's always going to be a stain against you as a label, and there's always going to be a perception to not work with that. And also, for a lot of the victims, how do you help and move forward from it? And you can't with that label because it's just, there's too much.
Yeah, if that label were to continue with much or even some of that same management, you're basically saying that, like, okay, there's a good chance that this can happen again or
exactly
perpetuate.
Yeah. And you're not solving the problem.
Yeah, there's no way for accountability there. So yeah, there are individual cases with all of them. I don't really have the heart with me to go into all the cases right now, but yeah, it's important that we kind of keep these things on watch and aware. And of course, as always, shout out to the people who come forward courageously and talk about these things, because usually
it's very difficult.
It's difficult to recount your experience. It's difficult to face the inevitable onslaught of like keyboard warriors who will defend these people regardless. So yeah, all courage to them for standing up for themselves. It shouldn't have to be that way, but yes. Moving on to brighter news in the indie scene of things. Earlier, when coronavirus started causing a bunch of lockdowns in the United States, and the rest is history, it was immediately a shocking thing for bands and musicians, because they were no longer able to perform in concerts and make money that way. So as artists' revenue is drying up, and there are these occasional charities here and there, but it's like a patchwork of things, Bandcamp decided to do a thing called Bandcamp Fridays, or it became Bandcamp Fridays, where every couple of Fridays or so, they would make it so they would not take any cut off of revenues from bands who released their music on Bandcamp. Any band who released music on Bandcamp or like got paid for things on Bandcamp on one of those Fridays got all the profits. Usually there's a massive cut taken from it, but not massive, but sizable.
And it's nice to see that for Bandcamp, because they're relatively smaller streaming platform and stuff compared to
I'd say it's like SoundCloud if you're serious.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's a lot of artists post on there. A lot of indie stuff goes on Bandcamp.
Major indie artists, too. Animal Collectives. I think Bridge to Quiet was the name of the full EP, if not at least one of the songs. Mm-hmm. But it was released before on all the streaming services, Bandcamp first.
Yep. So there's lots of artists that do it. And they're going to have more dates. They did it again in June and July, the 5th and 3rd.
You basically get the first Friday of every month.
Every month, yeah, because they have August 7th, the 4th of September, 2nd of October, 6th of November, and 4th of December. They'll do that. And the four Fridays that they've already done, they've already gone more than a little over $20 million into artists' pockets, which is awesome to see. That's really, really great to see. In the world of shit, and especially a lot of artists struggling, it's great to see a company doing something good for once. So shout out to them. It's really, really good
news. Absolutely. And now we will move on into our first album of the week of this episode, Folklore by Taylor Swift. It is 16 songs long, an hour and 3 minutes long. This is, you know, just...
It's a surprise drop. Because Lover came out last year.
Yeah.
And she was supposed to do this whole big Loverfest tour thing this summer, actually. She was supposed to open up the new stadium in LA
SoFi?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, one of the too many football teams that Los Angeles has.
Oh, that's actually for the soccer team. footy team, yeah. Because it's next to this science center. She was supposed to open it up with Loverfest. That was supposed to happen. But then since that didn't happen, she already made, like, I guess was already working on this album, and then she just randomly released it. Like, didn't say anything. She's like, here it is.
She was sort of saying that this is like her quarantine album. Because a lot of artists have like done this. We've reviewed Charlie XCX's. And of course, we have different... most of these have actually been pretty good that we've come across.
Yes.
These quarantine albums or projects.
Like Charlie XCX's was pretty damn good.
Yeah, and we come to these going like, okay, this could be like some half-finished garbage.
Exactly, or it could be really good. Yeah. And like for the ones we've had so far, pretty good. And for Taylor's album, it's definitely a... like pushing her sound a little bit further than like she started out as a country artist for her first two or three albums, then started to become to more of this pop, I don't know, pop icon and stuff, really into that genre. And Lover was kind of like a mix between pop, some like elements of alternative coming in there, little hints and bits, but not too much. Still into your genuine pop. And then Folklore is really slowed down. It's not upbeat really at all, and it's stripped down into more of that indie alternative scene, which I don't have a problem with because, you know, that's basically my favorite genre. That along with house are my two favorite genres. And it's interesting to see her like take a step back and go more into actual like meaningful lyrical development in a lot of her songs.
Yeah, you're right about that. The musicality of things will sort of take this indie, almost like a moon-shaped pool, and it's like eerie, sort of like
tamped down.
Because the drums are very muted. Like there's a little bit of guitar, but it's usually just like for a flourish and not the entire song, which you wouldn't expect from Taylor Swift.
Because like in Mirrorball, the guitar actually reminded me a little bit of like present tense guitar work, because it's really not the live version, but the album version of present tense. Because it's really hidden in the background, but it has this beautiful overlay, and I'm like, fuck, the production's actually really, really good. I'm surprised at it.
I think the production is good at this at times. Like, if we're at the beginning...
Oh, no, I was saying, like, I was going to say, like, my gripes with the album are comes at the bottom, because I think the first, let's say, half to about August or so, or maybe This Is Me Trying... Actually, This Is Me Trying is a decent song. That first chunk is actually pretty good. There's a lot of good sounds in it. You have the one which starts off, and that's like, okay, you can tell it's slowed down, it's a bit different. You have Cardigan, which I think is might be the best song on the album, either Cardigan or Mirrorball. Those are my two favorites on it. Is a really good, like, that sounds like a Taylor song, like a Taylor Swift song, but stripped down a little bit. To kiss in cars and downtown bars was all we needed. You drew stars around my scars, but now I'm has, you can hear that's that pop elements that want to come out, but it never comes out and doesn't do anything cliche, which is surprising. And it's the lyrics are good.
Yeah, the most cliche is like it's tried and true like territory for Taylor
Swift. Yeah, naturally. Like her voice, and, like, she does the same like vocal effects and everything too.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's Taylor's style, but even like I said, the instrumentation allows a little bit more time, I think, for Taylor Swift's lyrics to be, not that they weren't reflective before, but I think reflective and allowing it to go in different directions.
Well, she definitely opened up more too about herself in general, because she talked about like her and her mans in, I think, My Tears Ricochet and in Mirrorball. And then you have like This Is Me Trying, talking about like her own mental struggles and stuff, which is interesting to see. The only one I didn't like at the beginning was the last great American Dynasty, because it's actually interesting because it's about her. She has a place in Rhode Island, I guess. Like she has a mansion or something. She you know, rich white people, but it's about the family that lived there before.
Yeah.
So, and it just, I didn't like the production of that song. It was kind of cliche. Also, fuck billionaires.
It felt like the closest thing like, Taylor Swift was trying to be to,
like her oldish sound.
The closest thing to being political. Cause it's like, I mean, you're talking about class in the sense that this is like, basically I bought a fail son's mansion.
Yes.
It's kind of the song.
Yeah.
But at the end of the song, Taylor Swift was sort of like owning the fact that, yeah, I have the mansion now. And it doesn't seem to be like, I'm waiting for the hint of irony to come in there, and it's like not really there.
Yeah.
It's like, you're making fun of like American decadence, and you're celebrating it by taking it over and having it for yourself.
And perpetuating American decadence.
It's like, that's where...
The self-realization isn't there for that song, so I didn't like that. Luckily, right after that is Exile with Bon Iver, which is... I saw that when I saw the track listing of the album, it was announced to be dropped. I'm like, Bon Iver is on this track? That's interesting. Because Bon Iver is very experimental indie. Like, I like some of his work and other work. It's like, it's very, very out there. Not for everybody. But with this track, he definitely had a lot to say in it, because it sounds like a Bon Iver song with Taylor Swift on it. Which is interesting, but it worked in the album. So step right out. Because normally, like a Bon Iver, like if Bon Iver song, if this song was in Lover or something else before, it would be just like, it wouldn't work at all. But for a slow down album, it's actually quite good. I like the piano, and it's a felt muted acoustic piano, and it's a solid song. So
yeah, right. Sorry, I was thinking about the song Seven also.
Seven, which comes after Mirrorball. Yeah.
Yes,
because Mirrorball is a great like. That one's a straight indie track. And then Seven that comes after, it's also quite good. Which, again, I'm surprised that first half of the album going up to This Is Me Trying goes into like her kind of mental health struggles and stuff, other things where like anxieties and different things that play on her, which she's never really opened up to about
before. She's done
before,
it in like, little a little ways, bit, but always like, adjacent to men.
Yeah.
Adjacent to her experience with love and relationships, which these are, but there's so much more.
But
there.
This one is like saying, hey, this is me trying to say, like, this is me trying to be a, like a. Upfront about her trying to be like a bigger person or something, which I go, wow, okay, it's actually not like her other older stuff of, you know, wine, complain, relationships, blah. But this one's like actually looking in oneself. So I'm like, okay, you're moving up. You've now passed Lana Del Rey into the whiny women chart. So I'm gonna get yelled at for that, but whatever. And then after that, Illicit Affairs, Invisible String, I didn't like. They felt kind of boring and just flat in that regard. Mad Woman is interesting because it goes into the fact of like, I think this was her whole thing of when people were attacking her online last year and stuff. You can kind of hear that within the song. So like the lyrics of it's great, the production's a little iffy. And then the last couple of songs, Epiphany, Betty, Peace, and Hoax are all okay, but they just feel flat and kind of a little too chill for me for an album where just it started to drag on towards the end, because that first half of the album is actually quite good, and I was genuinely surprised about it, that some of the songs I'm like, I can genuinely listen to this like and be fine with it. The second half, I'm like, okay.
Yeah, the last half of the album was very much like, we're going back. We're regressing now.
Yeah, exactly. So I wish this was cut down. Like, if she stopped at maybe illicit affairs or something.
Yeah.
This would have been actually like a really fucking good album, and I would have praised her a lot more. I wish those ones may have been like on an EP or something else, or like a different drop, because it just. It dragged down a lot of the good stuff, that the good substance in this album down that I didn't need to be. But in saying that, she actually made some damn good music, which is surprising.
Yeah, this
it's
is
like fair play.
This is the closest to being able to hear a full Taylor Swift album as I have gotten to.
Yeah, because I listen to like up to about after This Is Me trying, I listened that straight through. I'm like, this, I can get on board. And then it's right after that, I'm like, okay, it started to drag on a little bit.
Yeah,
so,
this definitely has the most to offer of any Taylor Swift album.
For sure.
Yeah, God, I'm getting nauseous just thinking about all the other ones I've had to put myself through listening. Yeah. Don't like it. But this one, pretty good.
Surprisingly, so quarantine albums are coming out, man. They're shit.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
Every week on Audio Face, we have an arbitrary scale because every other music website has a real scale, but they don't keep true to it, and they're all nonsense, so we'll just tell you it's nonsense. Arbitrary scale this week is schools of thought of anarchism, because someone tweeted to me that they were what was the word? A patriotic anarchist, which straight isn't real, but we'll go into it. This album, I would call this the egoist anarchism.
Egoist anarchism, okay.
It's sort of like a devotion to the self, but also like an anarchy within that. It's almost like the worst form of anarchy, where it's just like everything for myself, like take no prisoners kind of anarchy.
Yeah, it's Mad Max.
When people say anarchy, they don't understand that like anarchy can actually be a political structure with like a central body and these things like that.
Yes.
But there is just straight, like, complete chaos anarchy, and this is complete chaos anarchy.
This is, this would be philosophical anarchism. So it's one of those dudes who's pseudo-woke about, like, anarchism and stuff, and says the free market will fix everything and whatnot. And
maybe Taylor Swift is a professor with really frizzy hair.
Who's just who rails about, you know, Enron and stuff, and be like, look how great the stock is.
Super great. Love it.
The market will fix itself. We don't need a minimum wage.
The market will correct itself. We don't need to give people stimulus checks while 20 million people are unemployed.
Exactly.
So Grimes, in her continuing relationship with noted eccentric billionaire Elon Musk, was reacting to noted eccentric billionaire Elon Musk's latest...
Twitter episode.
Twitter episode. That's the best way to call it, Shauna. Twitter episode. And in this reaction, Grimes responded to an Elon Musk tweet that was just simply just said, pronouns suck. Grimes responded and then quickly deleted a tweet saying, I love you, but please turn off your phone and give me a call. I cannot support hate. Please stop this. I know this isn't your heart. this seems very much like the Kim Kardashian, like, wife begging husband to get off Twitter.
Please stop your presidential run, please.
No, like,
get off stage,
you
please.
Know, like, I don't know what life is. It's all ephemeral to me. Nothing matters. But if I ever get to any kind of point where a significant other of mine has to beg me on a social media website to stop using that social media website, stop supporting me. Please leave. I don't want your help. Like, please leave me. I'm clearly sick.
You know, just take him out back.
And just
put him out of his misery.
Please. Yeah. So there's a number of things. This Twitter, I'm not sure exactly what caused Elon Musk's latest Twitter outrage or this episode. I could have a guess. 2 years ago, I tweeted how long till Elon Musk gets the guillotine, sort of infamously, and he responded to it because he's the dumbest CEO in existence. And 2 years and 4 days later, in fact, on the same day right before the pronouns tweet, Elon Musk tweets, I bet no one on Rose Twitter even has a guillotine. So it seems like he was, I mean, like, it's pretty clear. He wasn't talking about anything else. It seemed like he was subtweeting me. And,
you know, maybe he was.
Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. Twitter thinks they were, so they report, we'll decide. I just love the fact that apparently Elon Musk is actually afraid of his material conditions, as he should be, And I may have played a small part in that. It's fun.
It's hilarious.
Feels good, man. More LA news, I promise. This is a worldwide podcast. there's a new, like, album, sort of like compilation album project called Defund the Sheriff, mostly focused on, I mean, this is applicable worldwide, but it's mostly focused on the LA Police Department and the LA County Sheriffs, which are, in their own ways, like many police, but in their own ways, particularly egregious. There's there's just a number of different people there. But anyways, Michael De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine. Rage Against the Machine is going to be the executive.
Noted Marxist.
Yes, alleged Marxist. Definitely Marxist. Mike De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine is going to be producing the album. It features Aloe Black, Madame Gandhi, and Vic Mensa. And it's also like creating collaboration with the actual organization is Justice LA, Schools Not Prisons, Reform LA Jails, and Question Culture. So I know, like, this will be, I never know how much money these things make, apparently some money, because they put it out. I'm not interested in, like, reviewing it on the podcast, because it's just going to be, like...
This is a compilation thing.
It's a compilation album, and we know it's going to be, like, super political, and probably all those messages are going to be really draining and, like, kind of beat you over the head with it. So, like, there you go, there's the review. But it's going to a good cause. There are musicians doing effort for this, so it's cool. There's no Music Business Worldwide episode it's slim pickings, but not that slim pickings.
Speaking of slim pickings.
I mean, this is, well...
Yeah, I was just joking.
Yeah. We're now at the second review for the week. Logic released No Pressure. It is 15 songs long, 59 minutes long, and Logic. Allegedly, this is going to be his retirement album. Everyone in music says they're retiring, and they basically don't retire till they die.
Pretty much. You know, most stuff just becomes Yasin Bey. You've gotten... just multiple artists have said, I'm retired. No.
They always come back. Yeah, exactly. They always come back. It's that Rick and Morty episode. You son of a bitch. I'm in. But yeah, so if you're going to listen to Logic, there's two different ways to listen to it. You're a Logic fan from day one and you've been like following and you're in the whole like...
You're in the whole fandom and stuff.
You can pick your favorite Young Sinatra album because there have been four of them. You can like... references and you can tie these things together, sure. And there's like a casual listener, some person kind of knows about them, who knows who they are, knows who Logic is, and can kind of see for Logic for what he is, which is an extremely talented person, someone who goes for the right kinds of production, I think, in rap, if not a little bit worshiping the old heads sometimes, likes to go for that kind of older, classic, tighter production, but very lyrically talented. Clowned for being light-skinned, but, like, very lyrically talented.
Like, Bobby and Tarantino 1 and 2 are fantastic albums. I've liked both of those a lot.
I'll go further and say, like, I think The Incredible True Story is definitely, like, if we did a bonus episode of 50 of the 10s that was really quickly going through 50 through 100, it would be, like,
in the upper end of that.
Yeah.
It's really good. Because we've reviewed Young Sinatra 4 and Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
We did review Bobby Tarantino, too.
And we did do Burnt. Okay, that's right. Yeah. That did come out in 2018. Because Bobby Tarantino 2, we liked a lot. Young Sinatra 4, I was like, oh, okay, you need to stop making music for a little bit. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, you super need to stop making music because it's becoming very samey in that regard, especially in that album and No Pressure.
No Pressure is fan service, is kind of what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, if this is Logic's last album, which I have some reason to believe it, like, he has a kid, he's gonna take care of the kid and, like, focus on that, but, like, a lot of celebrities have kids. Future's got more kids than you can count or pay child support for, and they still make music.
So, Drake has a kid.
Drake indeed has a kid. Thanks to Pusha T for getting the doctor's records for us. But it's Logic fan service, which means a lot of the references in it. He produced this album with No ID, and No ID worked on I think The Incredible True Story, actually. I'm not the greatest Logic head, but worked on a previous Logic album that Logic heads really like. So just hearing that is really happy. And in the production of it, you have...
The production is quite good.
I don't think Logic's production's ever been really bad. It's been one of the better ones. Because a lot of stuff is self-produced, a lot of stuff he has production help with, but it's always this, like... One of the skits was, like, his favorites are RZA and MF Doom and all these others. Like, so he likes the old-school jazz loop standard kind of deal.
jazz beat standard.
Old jazz standard, yeah. But like, you go through the album, there's songs like Hit My Line and GP4, which are just very standard Logic. Celebration, yes, which is like a Logic song I've heard 19 times. there's some great beats hidden in there. And
yeah, there's some great lyrics that are hidden in there too, but like, there's so much fluff around it that it can be easily missed for me.
Yeah, and at this point, Logic is kind of like rapping about being a dad. I think it's almost, well, there's two songs that are right by each other that I think are really kind of like
Man
the high
I
points.
Is a Dad Bond?
Yes, Man yep. I, yeah. So, Man I Is kind of like, well, both of them are kind of looking at dad. And like,
exactly.
Man I Is kind of just like, who, it's your standard come up in rap song. Straight down to Target, don't do hard drugs or beat my wife, but the paparazzi still wanna start shit. I don't answer any questions, I leave them in the dark, bitch. Then I walk through the automatic doors. A couple fans spot me, but shit, I ain't on tour. I ain't trying to ignore, but I head to aisle 4 cause my drawers stink as fuck and I need some new drawers. Then I spot some more fans staying hella hardcore. Asking for a pic and I say sure. Scratch my dick and shake his hand. Shaking uncontrollably, he tells me I'm the man. Now I'm headed to aisle 3 for some Bounty paper towels. I also grab some wet wipes to clean the shit from my bowels. A really hot girl walks by with a fat ass, but I'm just wondering if Hefty really holds the most trash. Forgot my card at home, thank God I brought some cash. Then I grab some preparation H for the critics up my ass. Head to aisle 5 for some Sergeant Smash. As we've said with Lodge before, they're both, the songs are lyrically tight.
Flows are good, production's
really good. It's the thing is that like you've been hitting all of the marks about the same since like 2015 and 2016.
And on you've the one released hand, that's like a, six albums and after
on,
that.
And on so. The one hand, that's a testament to like how good you are. But on the other hand, we're just directly telling you, if you're this good, why is this all we're getting?
Yeah.
Like it seems like there could be like
there's
I don't know.
So much, and he's influenced by so many artists that are incredibly broad in their
great
spectrum.
Influences. Exactly. Like we clown on him for his love of Tori Ma,
but like Tori Ma has so many different projects.
There is no other rapper who really does that.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so much other music that he listens to that he kind of confines himself into this one space of being Logic per se. So here's another food for thought. Maybe he retires as Logic, but then does something a different project, which I wouldn't mind him doing if he does it and like really broadens out his horizons into something else, which would be interesting to hear. But you know, you never know.
That's a good point because that could definitely happen. You could just have a new persona and choose to do
you know,
it
like
that Tori way.
Ma is, or The Sins, or like you know.
But even like here. Let's make it fun as a Logic example. MF Doom had a number of different personas, but he kept those personas kind of going in different parts of his career, revisiting them, going back to them. There were things that were kind of part of his mystique, and so you could tell like as Doom, even when he was doing Victor Vaughn in that like teenager voice when he was in his like early 30s, like he had that range, and he wasn't waiting until he had drawn out the main MF Doom character before expanding on that range.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
So like, leader or whatnot.
I think if Logic had it in him to do like he was Psychologic was the original name, and then he went to Logic. So like, if he had it in him to be a new kind of artist, he would have shown us bits of that already. But now he's just shown us that like, hey, I've got a formula. I got fucking Formula 410 over here. It's a good ass formula. No one else has got it yet. And I'm gonna use the shit out of it until it becomes mainstream. And it didn't become mainstream. It's still like Logic is distinct. Yeah. But I want Logic to be more than Logic now.
Exactly. And my issue with this album is there's like three songs that basically sound like the same song over and over and over again. I'm like, okay, it's very monotonous at what he does. It's good, but it's boring now because it's so flat tone because we've heard it in so many different albums. And also, his past couple albums have been pretty lengthy when you have like his earlier works are usually like 30 to 40 minutes, which I think is like a perfect size of a Logic album is about that. So it's, you know, my famous saying of not great, not horrifying. So.
Yes. It is... Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, it's fan service. If you're a Logic fan, you're gonna love this. It's gonna be super emotional for you if you're a Logic fan. If you're anyone else, it's a perfectly fine rap trap album. Probably if you don't like rap or trap that much at all, this will be easier to get into because
for sure.
If you haven't heard Logic a number of times already, it's not gonna be super repetitive. Yeah. If you have, it is.
This is definitely anarcho-communism.
Really, I have a totally different one. I'm really strong in mine. So
interesting.
Go ahead and yours.
So anarcho-communism because it's like. You know, it's good. I've heard it. I've heard the case for anarcho-communism over and over and over again, you know, in some random leftist circles and dudes who are pseudo-woke, and it's become monotonous, insane, with a lot of people that I've heard, I'm like, okay, like this, you think you're really cool with it, but you're not. So
yeah, it's like anarcho-communists are, ironically enough, the most egotistical of the anarchists.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
They're like, oh, you really...
And a lot of the funniest part, a lot of them are uber wealthy too.
The professional middle class strikes again.
Exactly.
I'm going to go with anarcho-primitivism.
Ooh, all right.
It's basically the belief that mankind's progress was a mistake.
Yes.
Moving on from being a hunter-gatherer society is where we went wrong, and we all need to go back to our basics and beginnings, much like Logic is about to go and be a father and go back to his roots and everything, much like I think Logic needs to go, not go back to his roots, definitely not, but like rethink how he grew, because he grew in this trajectory and made this formula. But he should go back and just like maybe to kind of put a like bow tie on your earlier like food for thought thing. Maybe if he goes back to like who he is as an artist and deconstructs all that, and then instead of coming back as a Logic, he grows into something that maybe is closer to his real primitive hunter gatherer kind of.
All right, Alex Jones.
kind of persona, then he can come out and make music truly reborn.
He was on track for going to the moon, but he got stuck in low Earth orbit.
Shoot for the moon, aim for the stars.
Yeah. But he definitely got stuck on Earth.
Okay.
So, Q magazine is
not at all related with QAnon. We have to now make.
Oh shit! That's right. They just got hella banned from.
This is the year 2020.
That's right.
QAnon. And now we have to make these things. Q magazine is a very long-standing British music magazine.
Mm-hmm. They always have like fun caricatures of artists and stuff.
Yeah, I mean their covers are really one thing I miss about magazines. I like when websites try to kind of recreate is magazine covers, because they're really creative and really cool. But the covers are limiting in that it always has to look the same at the end.
Yeah,
and it was like. The only time I liked using Adobe InDesign, hands down the worst Adobe product of all time. But yeah, Gorillaz, even almost for every single album, from the self-titled one to Humans, animated a special cover for Q Magazine. Mm-hmm. And it was always like art that was never used anywhere else. That Jamie Hewlett was like, I made this for Q Magazine, and that's all. It's not going to be on any album covers.
It's cool. Else. Yeah.
It's rad. But yeah, they're a magazine. It's 2020. They're out of money, and so they're closing down.
They said that the pandemic hit them really, really hard, and they can't. There's no way that they can keep publication for it. So they got wiped out.
The last issue will be the September 2020 edition, so it'll start coming out in the summer, and it'll feature some of their biggest interviews ever. So Prince, David Bowie, Joni Mitchell. It's sad to see another one of these publications go while Pitchfork is still around, but...
Fucking kill me, man. Seriously?
Yeah, pour one out for them. Final album of the week. We have I Can Feel You Forgetting Me by Neon Treads. 10 songs long, 33 minutes, about 34 minutes long. And I was about to go in on the title.
So Neon Treads are an indie alternative band. Like, they were really prevalent in the early 2010s. Like, you definitely heard a few of their songs.
A staple of 2010s indie alternative.
Yeah, like, you got Everybody Talks, Animal, you have 1983. You got songs that are like they're that bridge between pop and alternative rock, pop and indie. And it's, some of those songs actually were quite good because it was, you know, genre-defying and a big sound of that era. And I liked it at the time. And they released another album in like 2014, and it was like hit and miss with it. But then they like went basically stone quiet, and then they came back together last year and said, "Oh, we should, you know, let's collaborate on an album." And they made
this.
And it's
fine. And here's the.
I don't think it's good.
I'm glad you pinpointed them in this like early 2010s period of alternative pop, because they're very much Neon Treads. You can consider very much a contemporary to. Arctic Monkeys in that time period, especially around AM. Neon Treads obviously started later, but
yeah, you have like a sound of the early 2010s. You're gonna add, like, if you have like a playlist of the sound of the 2010s, you're gonna add like Are You Mine. You're gonna add like Everybody Talks. You're gonna add some like Mountain Sound from Of Monsters and Men. You're gonna add a bunch of different artists that. Really were prevalent in the time, but some of them have moved on into other songs. Obviously, Arctic Monkeys released one of the best albums of the 2010s in Tranquility Base. You have different ones that are expanding genres and doing stuff. You have other ones that revert completely backwards. Like, who's the one that I Oh my God, I can't think. They did Lonely Hearts.
No, no, I totally know you're talking about Pumped Up Kicks. Yeah, Foster the People.
Foster the People. Because you got Foster the People's also that sound, because their album came out in 2011 with Pumped Up Kicks, Hell on a Beat and stuff. So that's that sound of the 2010s.
A lot of the story and of Audio Face is us loving this music from like the late.
Yeah, exactly.
This alternative pop music from the late aughts, early 2010s.
M93 goes into there and that bridges in even more gap.
Only to have our hearts broken in like the mid-10s.
Exactly. And a lot of them, some of them stopped making music, and then you have this.
This is one of those bands that dropped off.
It seemed like
it was promising in the beginning of it, honestly. Like, the song sounded okay. Nothing groundbreaking, but okay. But the key part is nothing groundbreaking. Like, literally nothing
groundbreaking. And they made one of my least favorite songs of the entire year. So, it starts off Nights Used to Like, are like, oh, they're okay. Like, I can hear some of their sound. They're trying to, like, do something different here. That I'm like, okay, it's not great, not terrible. You have Skeleton Boy, which is like, okay, this is more of like their older sound, but trying to add some like electronic. I'm like, don't Foster the People me. And they go to Living Single and they Foster the People me. Just the vocals, the production of that song are just ass. It's a really bad song. the lyric, it's like, Living Single is worse than Living Single feels worse than the body than drugs do. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, what the. That's a terrible lyric. And it's the production. It's very cliche. It just sounds like a band like again in like 2017 tried to do stuff, and it's now coming out in 2020. I'm like, you're not. You've already missed the mark of that ship, and you've missed the mark of a ship that already sailed like 10 years ago. So it's just a really awkward point, and they tried way too many sounds in it.
It's like making 2010s nostalgia music way too early.
Yeah, it's just
like it's too soon to consider it being groundbreaking. It's like you missed the ship sailed, yeah. But it's too early for us to consider this like a throwback to this era.
Because you have like a lot of indie artists that throw back to the 90s, right? Like B2B and a bunch of others who throw back to the 90s.
That's basically what indie
and
is.
That's
right
what indie is right now, and I've already yelled at my gripes at it because I hate grunge because I really don't think it's good. But some of the indie work is good because it expands on it. This is just like stagnant, plus you add a lot of electronic stuff that I really don't think a lot of these indie alternative bands know how to use it in the right ways, because it sounds way too manufactured, or it sounds it literally can hurt the ears at some points of it. So it's ironic because then this felt like the longest 30-minute album I've ever heard in my life, because it just took a while for me
so
to get
quotable.
In.
It's the longest 30-minute.
It just kept. I really wanted to like this. They finally give me something with New Best Friend, which is the last goddamn song on the album, and that one is a decent song. Get on board with them. Like, if you made more tracks in an album that were similar to that, you would have had a decent album. But I will applaud them on trying something different, because, you know, I will never rail against you for trying something different. I will rail against you in the way you make it, because it's either good or bad. There's usually no in between, and this is obviously on the bad spectrum, but, you know, always commend people for trying it. But you missed the mark, which is sad, because there's little, you can hear in different songs that there are little hints of like the brilliance and stuff that they've had before, but it never comes to fruition. New Best Friend is good because it's about living, like kind of being isolated, kind of being by yourself in that regard, and being like New Best Friend is like your mind, your own different
thing. You are your new best friend.
Exactly, and it's saying like living with your own thoughts and stuff, which I really like the theme of that song. I think they could have expanded upon that more and be better.
Interesting juxtaposition between that and being being alone is worse than drugs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's the thing where it's just the hypocritical within themselves within the own album. So it's just it. Yeah, it really missed a lot of marks for me, which is sad. So
yeah, definitely somewhat disappointed, but I didn't have super high hopes, expectations of this album.
It's not high hopes, which is.
I'm giving this the starter, which was anarcho-patriotism.
I was gonna go anarcho-capitalism, but you know, one of the two.
It's like a contradiction. It's just a contradiction.
It's a walking contradiction.
Like exactly. You just can't have that.
I'm an anarcho-patriot.
No. Specifically, I guess again, like you can have a state with an anarchy. So if you like that anarchist state because it's the only anarchist state, and you feel patriotic to that, I guess. But you cannot be an anarchist who is patriotic to the United States.
Because
that guy on Twitter.
That's exactly. When you said that, I'm like, that's a walking
contradiction. Because the United States is not an anarchist system. And because of that, you're not going to show loyalty to a state because loyalty to a state is inherently not anarchy.
Is it just the exact polar opposite of anarchy, which doesn't make sense? It's as this, I say, I love the free market, but I'm a cultural Marxist, which also makes completely no sense.
Oh my God.
Because, you know, humans are bad.
Everyone feels like they've taken an upper division political science course because they've watched a Jordan Peterson video, and that's what America has become.
I've totally forgot about Jordan Peterson.
I would love to as
well. What's he doing with his life?
I don't know. Quick hits this week before we end, and we will dip a little bit into Westworld. I told you, we did most of the entire podcast with Kanye.
Without Westworld.
And again, Kanye West claimed that there would be an album called Donda that would be coming out.
Mm-hmm.
This is time of recording, afternoon on Sunday of the 26th of July, 2020. Kanye West has not released that album. New Music Friday is on Friday. This is Sunday. So even if this comes out and he drops on Monday and this recording sounds weird, I don't care. Kanye turned his homework in late and it's his fault.
Exactly.
That's the music side of it. But,
The
personality is that, like, he's gone on these tirades on Twitter, and other than Elon Musk, it's incredibly funny. But, like, I'm not going to go into Kanye West's tirades on Twitter because it's a clear publicity stunt. We said that from the beginning.
Yes.
And also, dude's probably going through a mental health crisis. I am absolutely not going to, like, glorify that when he hasn't done material harm too badly, when, like, other people in the media especially are going to take advantage of that for clicks. And through all of this, Kim Kardashian asks the public for compassion and empathy because Kanye West is having these public episodes that are not clearly, as in, like, we can do armchair diagnoses, but, like, if you know, it's bipolar disorder.
It's like you can tell, and no one's really helping him around him, which that part always pisses me off when you have management and stuff, because we talked about this 2 weeks ago at nauseam, so I don't like talking about it because he's a giant buffoon.
But we even talked about it with Juice WRLD, where, like, you
exactly.
have all this management around you, and they do nothing,
and they do nothing.
You fall.
You see it with Lil Peep, you see with a bunch of other artists that not just like they have a lot of them have mental health struggles, a lot of them have drug abuse things, but no one goes around to help them. You even had it with a few other artists this year. It's just you have the same thing with Kanye West. So I'll give him empathy in that regard because there's so many people around you that they should help you, but at the same time, you're a tremendous asshole. So I'm never going to give you my full empathy.
Friend of the show, Elon Musk, along with Dave Chappelle, also, like, reached out to Kanye West personally, just to, like, check out and say, like, hey, we're on Twitter. We see you're fucked up. How are you doing? Dave Chappelle got on a private jet to Wyoming to visit Kanye.
Must
and make
be
sure
fucking
he was
nice.
Good. Again, like, must be nice and, like, obvious critiques of, you understand how we feel about wealth on this podcast. But, like, at least Dave Chappelle is, like, going out to check on Bill and make
cool.
sure he's good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine with that. Elon Musk did a FaceTime call. You know our opinions of Elon Musk on this podcast, but I mean, good for that. And Kanye has at least got himself to apologize publicly to Kim Kardashian for, like, the stuff that was going on. He was alleging that she was cheating on him with Meek Mill. There are photos that prove that wrong. There was during
money to the mind and a monster.
There's so many dark, twisted fantasy quotes that I'm saving.
That was Meek Mill, but
When Kanye West did that thing in South Carolina where he was going to, like, try to announce his presidential thing, we didn't talk about it mm-hmm. because publicity stunt, he had this teary moment where he was describing how his dad wanted to abort him and how Kim Kardashian wanted to get an abortion for the baby who eventually became Northwest, their first. And that made him really emotional. So it turned into this like anti-abortion thing, but it's also mixed with the bipolar disorder. So it's like a Kim Kardashian's my enemy sort of issue. And it became really public. So it got really messy, and he apologized for basically acknowledging that in a lot of ways, Kim Kardashian like covers for Kanye West and his weird shit. And he definitely doesn't like fit that end of the bill.
He needs to apologize to black people for the Harriet Tubman stuff and saying that slavery sounds like a choice to me. And all the other antics that he has done, wearing MAGA hats, sitting there with President Trump saying how great he is and all this other stuff. So no sympathy for him. Never will.
That's absolutely fair. I'm also going to add that there shouldn't be a lot of sympathy for Kim Kardashian. Like, it's good for her on doing these things. But A, this is still bare minimum of what you should be doing. And B, there's not a ton of acknowledgement of, like, what the Kardashian network and the Kardashian system of constantly being in the eyesight of attention with cameras and makeup deals and all this other like drama going on, what that does for your mental health, what that's probably doing for Kanye's mental health, whether he was eccentric or not. There's not a lot of acknowledgement of that there. So usually we like to end out of your face on a fun note. This was Kanye's life and it's not really fun right now. But I think we talked about it in a more serious, holistic way than anyone else in the music media will. So I can at least feel light and happy about that.
This has been on your face. What does it mean to play us out?
I will say next month is going to be pretty lit as far as music goes. Lull is over.
So there are two albums I definitely want to review next week. Naked and Famous came out this week, and Jesse Lanza's album came out this 2 days ago as well. So I want both of those. You know, hashtag my podcast too. Hashtag me too.
We'll also be getting the Psychedelic Furs.
Yes, you fucking assholes.
Which you'll be listening to for the first time.
I've never heard of the Psychedelic Furs in my life, and that was the first time I ever going to.
We'll get Sean's preliminary perspectives on the Psychedelic Furs next week, because next week's awkward because it's kind of July but kind of August. But like after next week.
August, you've got Disclosure, you've got a bunch of different ones coming out.
Got Katy Perry. There's a number. We've got some other audio face related things and network related things we'll be launching in August too, so that should be exciting. To play us out, thank you for listening and watching Audio Face Pod. We really appreciate it, honestly. Make sure you subscribe to this free podcast and show by going to youtube.audioface.show for YouTube. Subscribe to us on whatever podcast app you're listening on, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of those. The podcast can be found on Twitter and Instagram at AudioFacePod. Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez, and I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web, and on Instagram at Dan from the Internet, and in Elon Musk's head. Thank you very much for watching and listening to the show, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.